This evening we're going to take a little different tack as we approach this portion of Galatians. We're going to read just a verse or two, and then I'm going to go off on a big tangent to provide some background information. But my intent is that when you have this background information, which is one of the most foundational and important things I could teach you about the doctrine of salvation and the Jewish outlook on what salvation is, redemption, righteousness, justification, that once you have this, and you, hopefully you'll just soak it in, then when you go back to Galatians and many passages in Scripture and throughout the New Testament, you're going to see them with first century eyes. And you won't need me to comment on each verse. So, because we have a lot of material to cover, and I'm real intent on you really catching what I want to share with you, I want to ask you to hold the questions to the end. Could you do that? Questions and comments? I'm not saying you can't ask questions and share comments. Let's ask you to save them all for the end, okay? So that way we won't break the train of thought. So, we left off last week in Galatians, and we read about how Peter had come to one of the churches there in the area of Galatia, and he was eating with the Gentiles. And then when some of the Jewish believers from Jerusalem came, he kind of moved away from the Gentile believers because in Jewish tradition, Gentiles are unclean. And he ate only with the Jewish believers. And when this went on for a while, and Paul saw some of the other Gentile believers getting caught up in this sin, then Paul kind of reamed out Peter. And he tells us what he shared with him. Because what Peter had done, and we talked about this last week, Peter had put tradition above Torah. The Torah says, love your neighbor as yourself. And when you start treating Gentiles as unclean, so that we eat only with the Jews, you're not fulfilling that commandment. Throughout the Torah commands us, treat the sojourner among you as you do the native born. And over and over, the Torah says there'll be one law for you and for the sojourner, the Gentile who dwells with you. One law. And yet tradition had imposed two. You treat Gentiles one way, you treat the Jews another way. And so what had happened here was Peter was violating the very Torah that he had been called upon to uphold. And he put tradition above Torah. And so then we come to verse 16, where Paul says, nevertheless, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the Torah, but through faith in Messiah Yeshua, even we have believed in Messiah Yeshua. That even we, why? Is it like you're too good? For some reason you shouldn't be putting your trust in Messiah Yeshua? Why does it say, even we have to trust in Yeshua? What's that all about? It makes Paul sound a little condescending, doesn't it? What we need to understand is the mindset concerning redemption, justification, and righteousness that was ingrained in Jewish theology in the first century and in Jewish theology today. We must understand this mindset. When we understand this mindset, that even we will make perfect sense and the rest of this chapter and so many other passages in the New Testament. I don't know why I haven't gone over this concept earlier. I know I've touched on it a number of times, but tonight I really want to ingrain us in this truth, in this mindset, the Jewish theology concerning redemption, justification, salvation. Okay? I'm going to be quoting a rabbi named Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. He's one of my favorite Jewish writers. He was born in 1707 in Padua, Italy. So he's born 300 years ago last year. When he was about 28 years old, in 1735, he moved to Amsterdam. His dream was always to live in Israel. And in 1743, he moved to Israel finally. But he only got to live there for a short time, because 3 years later, at the age of 39, he died. But in his short life, only 39 years of age, he provided three monumental works that were authoritative then and are still studied, and many editions of these works are published today. The first major work, and the one I'll be quoting from the most, is called Derech Hashem, which means the way of God. Derech Hashem is like the first attempt at systematic theology, Jewish theology systematized. And this is the thing that Luzzatto was absolutely brilliant about. He was a brilliant teacher, and many of the sages during his time and afterwards would say, you know, if I had a chance to go hear Luzzatto teach, I would walk on foot thousands of miles to go hear him to teach and to sit at his feet. Luzzatto had this incredible mind where he could take massive bodies of work, organize it, systematize it, and lay it out in an ABCD fashion so anyone can understand it. This is what he did with Jewish theology. The theology that had been around from before Paul's day, it was very prevalent in the first century and is still prevalent in Orthodox Judaism today. That's why Derech Hashem is published in many editions. Most Jewish publishers have an edition of this work. It's annotated and translated and studied today more than even it was almost 300 years ago. His second work is called Mesilat Yesharim. And this, Yesharim, and that means path of the just. This is not about theology, this is about righteous living. How do we live a righteous life? You could almost call it like the Jewish equivalent of the Disciple 2-7 course, you know, the Navigator 2-7 class. And it's a discipleship class. This is how you live. And then he wrote his final work, the one to study the least, is the one Kolak Resheg Chokmah, which means the gates of wisdom. And it's strictly about spirituality. It's very heady stuff, very esoteric kinds of stuff. But his gift was to take the vast amounts of teaching and to systematize it and organize it, and the system has never been improved. Now, I'm not saying I agree with everything he wrote, but I'm going to be quoting Luzzatto because nobody says it better than Luzzatto does. Now, when it comes to redemption, to justification, the Jews see that there are two paths we can take. And Luzzatto spells these out very carefully. The first path is for the person who's trying to live a righteous life. He's trying to be pious. He's trying to be holy. He's trying to be obedient to the Torah and to pray and to be everything God wants you to be. Here's the guy who's really trying hard. And when you read what Luzzatto has to say, I'll give you one quote, one paragraph. He says, God's design is very deep, and he arranged things so that even though man must be immersed in the physical, he's able to rise to perfection through his worldly activities and the physical world itself. It is precisely through these that he attains a pure and lofty state. It is therefore his very lowliness that elevates him. For when he transforms darkness into light and deathly shadow into sparkling brilliance, he personally earns for himself unparalleled excellence and glory. What Luzzatto is saying here is this, and he goes on to explain more. He says, yes, God runs the world. God is sovereign, and God ordains a life for each person with the exact test and the circumstances and everything that person needs to grow and become perfect. Now, the word perfect in Hebrew that's used here is the word shalema. It comes with the word shalom, peace. But the word shalom means also complete, perfect, mature. And that's how Paul uses it in the New Testament. And when it talks about Yeshua, who is our shalom, it means more than just our peace. It means that he is also our completion. He's the perfecter of our faith. He's the one who brings the maturity. But in Luzzatto's world, in the theological mindset of the Jew, God, yes, God undergirds everything. He runs the world. Yes, by his grace, he provides us with everything we need to reach perfection. But we basically There are certain people who are just righteous and they're going to strive for righteousness. And Lozada goes on to say, but that last little bit they need to really be perfect, God gives them a leg up and helps them with that bit. But most of it is there on their own. God's grace undergirds, and God will help them for those last few rungs of the ladder they can't quite manage on their own. But man can reach perfection. That's the path that the righteous man takes. But then the question arises, how about the person who's not so righteous? How about the person who just doesn't have a highly developed sense of right and wrong? How about the person who maybe doesn't even care about being righteous? How about them? Well, then Lozado goes on and expresses the theology for this person. Now, this is absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Listen carefully to what I'm going to read to you. He says, for this person, God's grace comes through in a very spectacular way. Now remember, I'm not saying I agree with everything. We're going to go through and see where Lozada was a little off kilter, but also where he hit the bullseye exactly. But listen to what he says. When God in his highest wisdom considered everything needed to rectify the human race, now this is Jew and Gentile, right? The human race, and make it into the perfected community. This is the world to come, the kingdom, the perfected kingdom. But, you know, in Judaism, they often talk about tikkun olam, repair of the world. And we should all be involved in this. And as we work on our souls and grow to maturity, we're bringing that bit of repair to the world. And when you express love and kindness to your neighbor, when you obey the word, when you live a life like Messiah, you're bringing repair. We're all involved in this repair of the world. But eventually, the world's repaired. And what Lozado's saying is here is that God in his highest wisdom considered everything needed to rectify the whole human race and make it into the perfected community. He saw that this goal would be furthered, it'd be helped along, if some people could benefit others and help them attain a place in this community. The rule that the community of the future world be restricted only to those who attain perfection in their own right is therefore not absolute. For it was also decreed that an individual can reach a level where he can partake of perfection and be included in this community, listen to this, as the result of his association with a more worthy individual. You hear what he's saying? That a person can partake of this perfection, not in his own right, but by being associated with a more worthy individual. Now, for us as believers, who is that more worthy individual? That's Yeshua. By being associated with him, we partake of his perfection, his righteousness, his redemption, the salvation he offers. Now, he gets very specific about this. It's absolutely amazing. Let me read a bit more. He begins to talk about these individuals and how this and the mechanics of this works. And these individuals he refers to as Zadikim. That's the plural, a Zadik. A Zadik is a righteous man, a thoroughly righteous individual. And so he'll use the term Zadik. This word Zadik is found often in the Bible. And it's even translated in the New Testament. Look at some passages where the Zadik, where Yeshua is called the Zadik. Here's the first quote I want you to really look carefully at. So I put it on overhead. Look what he says. Suffering and pain may be imposed on a Zadik as an atonement for his entire generation. Now remember, this is a Jew. For all I know, he was not a believer in Yeshua as his Messiah. But he's expressing Jewish theology 300 years ago, and he says, suffering and pain may be imposed on a Zadik, imposed by God. as an atonement for his entire generation. This Zadok must then accept this suffering with love. Love of God, love for man. He must accept the suffering with love for the benefit of his generation. Do you see what Lozado's saying? A righteous man may receive suffering imposed upon him by God, suffering he does not deserve. But by his suffering, if he suffers in love for his generation, the whole generation experiences atonement. Oh, but it doesn't stop here. Lozado's just getting warmed up. Just as he accepts the suffering imposed upon him for his own sake, in doing so he benefits his generation by atoning for it. Such suffering also includes cases where a Zadok suffers because his entire generation deserves great punishments, bordering on annihilation. But it is spared because of the Zadok's suffering. And atoning for his generation through his suffering, this Zadok, this righteous man, saves these people in this world and also greatly benefits them in the world to come. Lozado continues, individuals such as these, however, are themselves perfect and are therefore worthy only of good. The only reason they suffer is because of others. God has chosen them to suffer for the sake of the whole generation. But now catch this. They can therefore not only rectify their own generation, but can also correct all the spiritual damage done from the beginning, from the time of the very first sinners. That would be Adam and Eve. It is obvious that individuals such as these will ultimately be the foremost leaders in the perfected community and the ones who are the very closest to God. Thus, through the sufferings of these select individuals, creation in general is cleansed, and step by step, the world is brought closer to perfection. This is something that is foundational to the Jews' understanding of redemption and justification. This is part of Paul's understanding. This is the understanding of the first century Jewish world. It's the understanding of the Orthodox world today. Now, you're probably asking the question, well, who are these people? I haven't met any of these people. Well, in Judaism, there have been certain rabbis, and they believe that in every generation, there are what they call the Lamed Vav Zadikim, the 36 thoroughly righteous men. It's a legend. But they believe that at any particular time, there are thoroughly righteous people alive. This is why sometimes you read about how students will almost worship their rabbi. They'll study the way he eats, the way he sleeps, the way he talks, the way he walks, the way he dresses, and they'll imitate everything he does. It's because sometimes they believe that their rabbi is one of these Zadikim. And what's really amazing is there are so many stories of some of these rabbis who are revered in this way of praying and miracles happening, of having prophecies and words of knowledge that come to pass. Don't think that the Christian world has a corner on miracles. We don't. Miracles occur frequently in Judaism, especially in Orthodox Judaism. Now, this is what Jewish theology teaches. This is what Lozado so succinctly puts into words. Now, where is the error? Here's the error. The error is this. The error is believing that there are some people who are absolutely perfect in this world. I have news for you. There aren't. There may be some people come pretty close, but they're not perfect. And even if they did reach perfection, I don't believe anybody reaches perfection in this life. Let's get that straight right now. I don't think any of us reach perfection in this life. We should all try, but I don't think any of us will succeed. But even if there were some people who came close to perfection, they didn't start off that way. They sure didn't start off that way. It took them many years and decades to get there. So let's review what we've learned so far. The Jews see there are two kinds of people. There are the righteous people who God has undergirded in their lives, surrounded with circumstances and the teachings they need for them to become perfect. And so by their own efforts, they reach almost perfection, but God gives them a leg up the last little bit they can't do on their own. And then there are the unrighteous, people like us. You know, just the people who are just the regular schlubs. And one day we heard the gospel. It's like, wow, I want this. We learned about God and we learned about His Word. And here we are, learning to pray and to study and to live a redeemed life. And for us, according to Lozado, according to Jewish theology, we receive salvation by God's grace, entirely by His grace, through the suffering of a Tzaddik. A Tzaddik you may not even know, but a Tzaddik who loves us and who brings correction to the entire world, not just his generation, but the sins even from the very beginning, it says. Now, this is what Paul believed. And he believed he was one of this first category. This is why he boasts about how he progressed in Judaism and in the traditions, and how in one place he even says, and he kept the Torah without a fault, kept it flawlessly. And yet he calls himself the chief of sinners. He had kept all the dictates and the traditions and all the dottings of the I's and the crossings of the T's, but his heart was still far from God. Then one day, God knocked him off his donkey on the road to Damascus. And the master says, Paul, why are you persecuting me? Actually said Saul, same person. Why are you persecuting me? He says, who are you? I'm Yeshua, who you're persecuting. Wow. Paul's theology went right up on his head. Paul began to realize something. And he writes about it years later in Romans. I want you to turn to Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3. And Paul gives us the correct version. He gives us the correct version of the idea of the Tzaddik. The correct version of man's sinfulness or righteousness. And he spells it all out in perfect detail and orderliness. And here's what he says. We'll start in Romans chapter 3 and verse 3. I call this overhead Yeshua, our Tzaddik. Is that focused good enough? In Romans 3:23, that verse we all know, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. In other words, Paul says that first category Lozado writes about, it doesn't exist. It ain't there. We've all sinned. We all fall short of God's glory. You may think you're righteous and you can do it most on your own. You just need God to help you a little bit up over the edge. But Paul says, I got news for you. We've all sinned. And you might be thinking, well, wait a minute, don't these Jewish people know that passage in Isaiah, for we all, like sheep, have gone astray? We've turned everyone to his own way? Well, see, the Jews tend to do the same thing that a lot of us believers do. We say, oh, that was for that time. That was for that generation, for that group of people in that situation. It's not for us. But Isaiah, when he said, we all, like sheep, have gone astray, he's talking about the whole human race, Jew, Gentile, alike. So Paul says, forget that first category of the righteous person who just needs a little leg up from God. It doesn't exist. But he does say that all justification is achieved through one Tzaddik. There is a Tzaddik. There is a thoroughly righteous man whose suffering brings redemption and justification to the whole world. Romans 3:24, being justified as a gift by His grace through the redemption which is in Messiah Yeshua, whom God displayed publicly as a propitiation in His blood In other words, he suffered. Blood refers to suffering and death. Through faithfulness. This was to demonstrate his righteousness. There's that word tzadik, tzadikim, tzedakah, righteousness. To portray Yeshua's righteousness. Yeshua's the tzadik, the only tzadik the world's ever seen. And his righteousness works backwards and forward through the whole generation, forward in time, backward in time, to one tzadik who takes away the sins of the world. It's his righteousness. There's no other tzadikim. Others may come close and imitate, but there's only one who's thoroughly righteous, whose suffering and death provides justification for the entire human race. In his blood, through his faithfulness, this was to demonstrate his tzedakah, his righteousness, because in the forbearance of God, he passed over sins previously committed for the demonstration, I say, of his tzedakah, his righteousness at the present time, so that he would be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Yeshua. In other words, God overlooked the sins of the past because the tzadik had not arrived yet. So the blood of animals kind of painted over their sins, did not remove them. Just kind of, okay, by these sacrifices you're showing your faithfulness in God and his forgiveness. But the tzadik hasn't arrived yet. And Paul says, but in our time, he's been set forth. He's been portrayed. Here's the righteous man. Here he is. And why is he suffering? For his own sake? For the sake of the world. For all those before, all those alive then, and all who would come after. See, Lazarus got it dead right when it comes to the how God will use a tzaddik to bring rectification to the whole world. Lazarus wrong when he thinks there's a bunch of them. And Lazarus wrong when he thinks there's some that don't really need the tzaddik. Paul says we all need the tzaddik, and he exists. He lives. We go on. Therefore, no one can boast of his own righteous achievements. No one can say, well, I'm in that first category. I just need a little help from God. I'm doing it mostly on my own. I just need a little leg up over the last rung. Because the next two verses say, where then is boasting? Paul's addressing that first category. Where then is boasting? That's excluded. What kind of law? Of works? No. But by a law of faith. For we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from works of the law. You can't say, look how good a job I did of keeping your Bible, of obeying his commandments. Look how good a job. God says, sorry, not good enough. Doesn't measure up. Our tzaddik brings redemption to both Jew and Gentile, like he was always said, for the whole world. The next two verses, verse 29 and 30. Or is God the God of Jews only? Is he not the God of Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since indeed God, who will justify, there's that Hebrew word for tzaddik, to make righteous, to make right, the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith is one. Since a person is justified by faith in our tzaddik, Yeshua, we must strive toward perfection. Now this is where that first part of the tzaddik's theology comes back into play. No one gets perfect on their own. But once the tzaddik has affected your life, guess what your job is now? To try to achieve perfection. Now, Perkei Avot talks about how we've been given a task, we'll never complete it, but we're not to use that as an excuse to give up. Our job now, as redeemed individuals who've been justified, who've been saved by this righteous one, this tzaddik, what is our job now? To go to that first category and try to become perfect if we possibly can. We won't do it, but don't give up. I think of that analogy we used years ago about the mountain that has no top. The mountain of righteousness has no top. It goes on forever. Our job is to climb. Keep climbing. Don't look down and say, oh, I'm higher than those. This is good enough. And don't look at the ones that are further than you and say, oh, they're showing off. Just keep climbing and help one another in your climb. That's our job. You can never reach the top, but we've been given the job. Keep climbing, as C.S. Lewis puts it up, further up and further in than Chronicles of Narnia. Verse 31, do we read it? Do we then nullify the Torah through faith? May it never be. On the contrary, we establish the Torah. What Paul is setting right here is that the Torah is not a salvation instrument. It was never given us to get saved by. It's not its purpose. It doesn't redeem. It doesn't justify. It doesn't make you righteous. It's God's law. It's God's rules. It's God's commandments. This is what you do. Okay? The Tzaddik will do the saving, but now here's what you do. But when you get it all upside down, say, well, I get saved by keeping the Torah, and I just need a Tzaddik to help me out a little bit. You know, he's saying this is what's wrong. This is what the influencers were doing in Galatia. And he said, no. Yes, you obey the Torah. That's your job. But he doesn't save you. The Tzaddik saves you. Striving for the highest standard of righteousness is to be the goal of every person who has been rescued by Yeshua the Tzaddik. And Paul gives us a whole chapter about that. Let's go to Philippians. You know, as you read these passages that Paul writes, and you have the background of Jewish theology concerning redemption and justification, these passages now make all kinds of sense. All kinds of sense. When you realize there are two groups in the Jewish mindset, the righteous who receive a little help from God, and the unrighteous who are saved entirely by grace by the sacrifice of the Tzaddik. You realize this is their mindset, and Paul's bringing correction to that. He's putting the two in the right relationship with each other. Then it all makes sense. Philippians 3, wonderful chapter. I'll just read. Well, I better not start at the beginning. I want to start with verse 1, where Paul's telling about how he is a Hebrew. Hebrew is a Hebrew of Hebrews, and how he had fulfilled all these commandments, but they couldn't save him. We'll pick it up in verse 9, just for the sake of time, but at home I hope you start in verse 1. It says, and may be found in him, the Messiah, not having a tzedakah, a righteousness of my own derived from the Torah, from obeying the Torah. But that tzedakah, that righteousness, which is through faith in Messiah. The tzedakah, the righteousness which comes from God on the basis of faith. That I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings. Remember, the tzaddik must suffer. The tzaddik must suffer to bring this justification or redemption to the world. So he says, I'm going to know my tzaddik who loved me and suffered for me. I'm going to be a partaker in his sufferings. I'm going to know him that intimately. Being conformed to his death. In other words, he gave his life entirely for me. I'm going to give my life entirely for him to serve him. Because now I have hope that I can achieve true righteousness. I have hope now that my Torah obedience can mean something. Because now I'm obeying the Torah not in order to get saved, because I've been graciously saved by a tzaddik, a righteous man. My whole purpose for obeying God has changed. I do it out of love and thanks to him, not out of trying to achieve and gain merits and say, look what I've earned. Okay, God, just give me help on this last little bit here, if you would. I don't need you for anything else. Just this last little bit. That's all I need. And go on, and he puts it so well. In order that I may attain the resurrection from the dead. Now, it sounds like he's trying to earn salvation here, doesn't it? But he clarifies. Not that I have already obtained it, or have already become perfect. Shalema. I haven't become perfect. But I press on, so that I may, get this now, get the picture. I may lay hold of that for which also I was laid hold of by Messiah Yeshua. Here's the picture that a dear friend gave me about 29 years ago. He said, here's God's hand, and here's Paul's. And Paul's saying, God's got a hold of me. But I'm going to do everything I can to grab hold of him as well. Now, I know if my grip slips, his won't. But I'm going to do everything I can to lay hold of him who has laid hold of me. I want to strive for perfection. I'm not perfect yet. I won't be. Boy, I want to make that my goal now. I want to obey Him the best I can, serve Him the best I can. Not because of what it will do for me, but because of what He has done for me. This is my loving response to Him. You see what He's saying? I may lay hold of that for which also I was laid hold of by Messiah Yeshua. He laid hold of me. Now I'm going to lay hold of Him. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet. I know if Paul could say this, we can all say this too. Paul says, I'm not perfect. He says, I haven't laid hold of it yet, but I don't quit. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Messiah Yeshua. Not apart from Him, but in Him. You follow? You see where Paul's coming from? Does it make sense? But then verse 15 kind of throws it. It says, let us therefore, as many as are perfect. Wait a minute, he just said none of us are perfect. He's talking about, he's using the word shalem in a different way. Now he's thinking in Hebrew, right? This is written in Greek. But he's a Hebrew thinker. He's talking about maturity. Who are attaining maturity. Have this attitude that in anything you have a different attitude, God will reveal that also to you. However, let us keep living by that same standard to which we have attained. Keep obeying the Lord, but now your motive is different. And then 1 John 2:1. 1 John 2:1. Look what John says here. 1 John 2:1. My little children, I am writing these things to you so that you may not sin. And if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Messiah Yeshua, the Tzaddik. See, John directly refers to Yeshua as the Tzaddik. He's the Tzaddik, whose suffering brings redemption to the whole world for all time. Wow, that's amazing. You know, Isaiah foresaw the coming of this wonderful Tzaddik. And he talks about him in chapter 53, Isaiah 53. Let's go there. Isaiah 53. The chapter I know you've all heard read, and you've read it yourself, you've heard it sung. A lot of songs take their lyrics right out of this chapter. But now with the background we've just looked at, let's read it again. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For He grew up before Him like a tender shoot and like a root out of parched ground. He has no state before Him or majesty that we should look upon Him, nor appearance that we should be attracted to Him. He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And like one from whom men hide their face, He was despised and we did not esteem Him. Surely our griefs He Himself bore, and our sorrows He carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed Him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But He was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastening for our well-being fell upon Him. And by His scourging, we are healed. All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord has caused iniquity of us all to fall on Him. He was oppressed, He was afflicted, yet He did not open His mouth. Like a lamb that is led to slaughter, and like a sheep that is silent before its shearers, so He did not open His mouth. By oppression and judgment He was taken away. And as for His generation, it was a wicked generation, that generation. And as for His generation, who considered that He was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgression of My people to whom the stroke was due. His grave was assigned with wicked men, and He was with a rich man in His death because He had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. But the Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. If he would render himself as a guilt offering, he will see his seed, he will prolong his days, and the good pleasure of the Lord will prosper in his hand. As a result of the anguish of his soul, he will see it and be satisfied. By his knowledge, the Tzaddik, my servant, will Yazdik the many. Okay, I'm giving the Hebrew words. By his knowledge, the Tzaddik will Yazdik many. The righteous one will make many righteous. How do the many get righteous? By their own works? By Torah obedience? By religious observance? By the Tzaddik. Therefore, as he will bear their iniquities. Verse 12. Therefore, I will allot him a portion with the great, and he will divide the booty with the strong, because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he himself bore the sin of many and interceded for the transgressors. There is the one, the only Tzaddik of the world, our Yeshua. All right. Now we're ready to go to Galatians. And we read these final verses of chapter 2, reading them in the light of what we've just heard. See if they don't sound different to you. Galatians 2, starting with verse 16. Nevertheless, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the Torah, but through faith in Messiah Yeshua, even we have believed in Messiah Yeshua. Why now the even we? Because Paul saw there were two groups. There were the righteous and the unrighteous. The righteous only need a little help. These Orthodox Jews. And he's given us his track record back in chapter 1 about how he's done all this. But he's saying, you know what? That group doesn't exist. We're all in this together. Even we who thought we had it all together and didn't need a whole lot of help from God. You know what? Says we all need it. Even we have believed in Messiah Yeshua so that we may be justified by faith in Messiah, not by the works of the law. Since by the works of the law, no flesh will be justified. But if, while seeking to be justified in Messiah, we ourselves have also been found sinners, is Messiah then a minister of sin? This is an important verse. Because so many times we hear only about the grace that's given to us through Yeshua. Sins have been wiped away. We've been set free. We've been made righteous. And all this is true. But then we almost make Yeshua the minister of sin because saying we don't have any rules now. As if God comes into our room and says, make a mess. I'll clean it up later. It's okay. Just throw food. Do whatever. That's all right. I clean it all up. And Paul's saying, is this any way to repay him? He is the righteous one who gave his life for us. What should we do? We should try to become righteous. We should try to live as righteously as we can so we can lay hold of the one who's laid hold of us. Trying to become perfect does not save us, but now that we've been saved, let's try to be perfect. God deserves this kind of people. And now he's equipped us to become as much as we can be. Let's strive towards that. And if we don't, what are we saying about him? He saved us so we can just do things our way? We make him a minister of sin. And he says, may it never be. It's like in Romans, shall we sin that grace may abound? God forbid. God forbid. For if I rebuild what I have once destroyed, I prove myself to be a transgressor. In other words, I'm not going to go back and try to earn my salvation. My salvation is in my Tzaddik. I'm not going to go back and try to earn it myself. For through the Torah, I died according to the Torah. In other words, the Torah says, you're guilty. You haven't kept these commandments in your heart. You have not met the standard of righteousness that I want. You deserve death. so that I might live to God. For through the Torah I died according to the Torah, so that I might live to God. I have been crucified with Messiah. You understand what that means now after reading Isaiah 53? After understanding how the Tzaddik had to suffer to bring that righteousness to others? He's saying, I am going to so identify with this Tzaddik, this righteous one who lived life for me, that I'm going to give my life for him. I'm going to get right there on the cross with him. I'm crucified with him. If he could say no to a perfect life that deserves all glory, all riches, all the benefits, and say no to that, and come down here to live a life like this, and to die the criminal's death, be buried, you know, and die such a terrible death. If he could do that for me, I'm going to lay down my life for him. This is what he says in Romans 12. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to him, which is your reasonable service. Because that's what he did for you. You see? I've been crucified with Messiah. It's no longer I who live, but Messiah lives in me. The life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me. Remember, Lozado says, the Tzaddik must suffer with love for those he's suffering for. Who loved me and gave himself up for me. I do not nullify the grace of God. For if righteousness comes through the Torah, Messiah died needlessly. It doesn't come through the Torah. It comes through tzedakah, comes through the tzedek. You got it? Righteousness comes through the tzedek. Now, the whole next chapter is about what our relationship to Torah now is. Okay? It's not a salvation instrument. It's God's law. It's just God's law. You just obey it. That's what there is. And now that you see what God's done for you, you can obey it out of love. Okay? That's what chapter 3 is about. Does this make sense? This is an amazing insight. Okay. Let's take some questions and comments that you might have. You're probably thinking of some other verses. You think of some other verses in the New Testament that, you know, talk about how Yeshua is the Tzaddik and go ahead and share those with us as well. Yes, Jim. Lozado, yes.
One Tzaddik benefit from his whole generation. And as you pointed out well in Romans, it does away with the personal decision for all has sinned. This rabbi, I can't pronounce his name.
Lozado.
Okay. So he is doing no more than quoting his opinion. There is no Tzaddik or great righteous man as he needed other than Christ himself.
You got that exactly right. He was writing about a principle that he did not realize had been fulfilled in Yeshua. Then again, sometimes I wonder if Lozado wasn't a closet believer. I've often wondered that, some of the things he writes. I don't know. But the principles that he's writing about, the suffering Tzaddik, is something that's part of the mindset and the theology of the Jews. They get it from a lot of... Yeah, where did they get the principle? There are tons of footnotes in the book that I have, the annotations. They quote several passages in the Scripture, and they quote the Talmud. The Talmud talks about something. It is something the rabbis understood. Here, let me give you an example. Our Torah portion this week is about the Passover Seder, isn't it? All right? That's called Salvation by Grace. In this case, instead of a Tzaddik suffering and dying to bring redemption, it's a lamb, the Passover lamb. God didn't tell the Jews, okay, if you do this and this and this and this and this, and you live up to this standard of holiness, then I'll come along and help you out of Egypt. He didn't say that. He said, you put the blood of the lamb on the door of your house, and you eat the lamb's body, and get ready to leave. When I see the blood... had nothing to do with your righteousness, had nothing to do with your holiness, your attainment in Torah. It's just when I see the blood, I'll pass over you. And you eat the body to give you strength. So they're passed from death to life, they're passed from slavery to freedom. When they come to the Red Sea, here's the army of the cavalry of Egypt coming after them. Who did all the fighting? The Song of the Sea, next week. Who did all the fighting against Egypt? God did all of it. Every bit of it. Israel never had to lift one finger to fight off Egypt. Their redemption, their deliverance was provided entirely by God through the blood of the Lamb. Now, let's move on through the wilderness and come to Canaan. Now they're getting ready to come into the land of promise. They're getting ready to come into the maturity. Now who does the fighting? God does. Who's the one who wields the weapons now? Israel. Did I say God? Who does the fighting? Israel does the fighting. I'm sorry. And you know, I love that passage where Amalek attacks just out of the blue. And so Moses goes up on the hill, and there's the two men, Hur and, help me out, who's the other one? Aaron and Hur. They hold up his hands. He holds up the staff. And down in the valley is Yeshua, and all the Israelites fighting Amalek. And when Moses' hands are held high, it says Joshua was strong, and Amalek was weakened. And when Moses' hands began to sink, Amalek became strong, and Joshua was weakened. You see this? We do the fighting now, because we're pressing towards maturity, towards gaining our inheritance, towards conquering the land, living the fruitful life. We don't live on the manna anymore. Everything's provided miraculously. We now plant crops. We now grow crops. We eat the fruit of the land. This is maturity, the responsibility. This is what the life is supposed to look like. But Moses' hands have to be held up for us to win the battle. And when we let Moses fall down, Amalek gets strong and we get weak. See, there's a relationship of Torah to the life we live now. We've already been saved. We've already been delivered from Egypt. All right? God did all the fighting there. But now as we come into our inheritance, as we come into the life we've been saved to live, we need to take our weapons and fight. Now this is what we do. See, in the Jewish mindset, we fight our way out of Egypt, and then God just gives us the land. La-di-da, you know? But that's not how it works. It's the other way around. And this is what Paul's saying. Okay? You're redeemed by grace, delivered and rescued completely by His grace. But now you come into your maturity. Now it's time to fight. It's an important lesson for us to see. Yes, David.
Can you put up on the idea of the fact that they never did actually teach in so many words that you are perfect if you keep the Torah perfectly. But Paul is explicitly arguing that that's not the case.
Yeah.
So he sensed that mindset was there.
Yes.
So his explicit argument is just being made against something that was nebulously there.
He's making his argument against this whole idea that I try to gain salvation the best I can through my obedience to Torah. God's equipped me to do this. And the little bit I can't do my own, then God will come along and help me. But I want to do it as much myself as I can, with as little help from God as possible. When you read the Jewish literature, you'll find that oftentimes they'll say that certain Jewish patriarchs hesitated to pray. Because if they were to pray and God answered, then that decreases their merits a bit. It's almost like they cashed in some of their chips. They don't want to cash in their chips. So they don't want help from God unless it's absolutely necessary. It's bizarre to read these comments. But they had it wrong. You know, these commentators have it wrong. It's all God. When it comes to redemption, justification, salvation, it's all Him. It's not us. It's all Him. It's all grace through faith. But now that we have experienced this justification, our job is now to press on and become all we can be. Okay? Yeah, Jim.
I asked a question to because I'm puzzled by this rabbi, and that he kind of all of that generation or any generation to the only one life. Why was he considered so great?
Well, remember that in Jewish theology, there's a number of tzaddiks. In fact, the legend is there are 36 in every generation. They're called hidden. The 36, the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, but they're hidden.
Not perfect, right?
Well, in the legend, they're perfect. But we know that nobody's perfect. We've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. So that's where the Jewish theology is a bit confused. So Jewish theology teaches there are a number of tzaddiks in every generation, and then through their suffering, God will impose suffering on them to bring atonement to others. You know, that's not true. But it's kind of a shadow of the truth, which is there's one tzaddik who's thoroughly righteous, whose suffering and death provides justification for all time, before, during, and after, for all generations. He brings that correction. So he had a shadow of the truth. And there's the same shadow that Paul had in his mindset. But once Paul had his eyes open, he began to see, oh, okay, that first group doesn't exist. There's none who are righteous. No, not one. They just don't exist. There's only one righteous, that's Yeshua. Yeah, Ron.
So apparently God knows that principle, the understanding of the Jewish rulers, throughout.
Yes. Absolutely. The idea that atonement comes to another.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. It's yes. Yes. There's a shadow of the truth. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
I was thinking about Noah. He was considered righteous in his generation. Mm-hmm. So could that claim?
Yeah. Yes, they refer to Noah as one of the tzaddikim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Noah's righteousness is only good enough to save 8 people. And even the commentators say, yeah, Noah's righteous, but not that righteous, or there have been a lot more saved. They say Abraham is the one who is righteous. Yeah. Dan, did I see your hand up back there? Yes. The way the Greek is structured, it means according to the law. Yeah. When you just say I died to the law, it means like in my experience, the law doesn't even have a place. What it means is in the Greek, the way the Greek grammar is structured, I died according to the dictates of the Torah. Because the Torah dictates I deserve to die. So I have died according to the Torah. Not died to the Torah, because when you go on a little bit further, in chapter 3, verse 17, Paul says, what I'm saying is this, the Torah, which came 430 years later, after Isaac, and after the Passover, the first Passover, does not invalidate a covenant previously ratified by God, so as to nullify the promise. In other words, Paul's saying, salvation by grace came first, the Torah came later. That's the proper order. But in Jewish mindset, we put Torah first, our obedience to that, and we need God's grace to help us where we can't help ourselves. And he's saying this backwards. And that's why he's emphasizing God's gracious promise to Abraham, where he believed God and he counted him as righteousness, as tzedakah. That came first. It was another 430 years before he got the Torah. You see? And he's trying to show this is the proper sequence of things. Grace first, then obedience to the Torah. Then you're prepared. Okay. Jim, you have an intense look on your face.
Then if it was grace, when they came to the law, they gave up grace to accept the law. You know,
No. They were given the Torah because they've been saved. And the question is, what do I do with my time? Here I am, I'm redeemed. What do I do? God says, here's what you do. This is how you live a blessed life. This is how you live having strong families, strong marriages, having good health, having good crops. This is how you are a light to the nations around you. This is how you announce my grace to the world. You live the way I live. In other words, I've adopted you into my family. Here are the family rules now. I adopted you because I loved you. I adopted you not because you deserve it. I adopted you completely by grace. Now if you're a member of my family, here's how we live here. Now, if you break the rules, you're still my child. It doesn't change that. You're my son forever. But, you know, fit in. Let's learn how to live the way I live. Okay? Yeah, Robin.
This morning, I know I was driving crazy with similar questions. I couldn't demonstrate it, but I really made it all myself.
Okay, good.
I love what you told me when I said, okay, so if designing took care of saving the world, what is that slave does for us have? And you gave me the illustration of the women saved in the boat with the one who comes.
Right. Yeah.
If you could share that, I think that's
okay. Yeah. Let's say, I'm not a great swimmer, but let's say I was, and there are a bunch of women drowning. There could be guys, too, but I can't marry a guy. But so there's women. So there's 10 women. And so I row out there, I swim out there, I save each one of them. I save them all. But one, like the one of the 10 lepers who was healed, comes back to really thank me. He says, I want to know you. Why did you do that? Why did you risk your life for me? And I began to share with them who I am. You know, and who God is and why. And eventually fall in love and get married. You see, the righteous Zadok provides this justification to the world. But the question is, how many are going to return that love to him? How many are going to be foolish virgins who don't put any oil in the lamp? And who are the ones who are going to intently look for their bridegroom to come? Who are the ones who are going to say, oh, good, I'm healed, and walk off. But who's going to be the one leper who comes back to thank him? What he's done. Who are the ones who say, I want to know you. I'm going to live for you. I owe you my life. So I'm going to give my life to you. I want to put my ear to the door and have the awl put through it. I don't want to be free. I want to serve you the rest of my life. That's what God's looking for. He's looking for a bride. People who will freely come to him because of what he's freely done for them. And David will give you the last word because that nursery worker is going to be really upset with me. But I'm going to tell them it's you guys' fault.
Okay. Earlier, comment about there being truth to the idea of there being two classes. It seems like God has set up a Zadok class, and we can see people like Moses and Abraham and Noah. And whereas it's not right to call them perfect, but God has made that class for us to look at and see pictures of Yeshua. And so, I mean, it's true, there are Zadok, but they're not perfect.
Right. And God has called, you know, I wasn't going to get into this, it's going to take time, but you've opened the door. You know, Yeshua is the Zadok, and we are called upon to be righteous. He is the Savior, but we've been called upon to save. And just as his righteousness atones, okay, covers, that's what the word atone means, means cover. What does the word tell us? Love covers, atones a multitude of sins. So in other words, and to a small degree, you know, he's the Christ, we are the Christians, we have to reflect that, and to a great degree, we can bring correction and redemption to others. Not because we're the Zadok, but because we represent the Zadok. So yes, and in small, miniature ways, we imitate his works of salvation with others. But always, he's the trunk, we're just the branches, and we abide in him, his word abides in us, we bear fruit. So we're his ambassadors, and we represent him. We're united with him in that way. We have got to close. We have gone so far over time that I may not teach it all next week just to make up for it. All right, let's close in prayer. Father, thank you for this time. Thank you for your word, and thank you for the ability to read, to reason, to understand. We pray you continue to reveal your truth to us. And Lord, help us to continue to read your word with new eyes. Thank you so much for our Zadok, Yeshua, the precious Messiah, the perfect one, who suffered willingly out of love for us. For he loved us when we didn't deserve it. For while we were yet sinners, he came and he died for us. Lord, what love and grace that is. Lord, may we get such a grasp of that kind of love and grace that will inspire us to love you back the same. To love you the way you hunger to be loved, the way you deserve to be loved. We can serve you not because we can earn blessings through it. We serve you because we just don't want to leave your side. We want to model our lives after our precious Messiah. So Lord, make us those kind of people. And we praise you again for this time together. In the precious name of Yeshua. Amen.